It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Well, I'm happy to be on it, and it's not very usual that an old offensive line can just bite back somewhere. So I'm happy to be back on your broadcast after having been on a couple of years ago.
That's right. Welcome in, everybody, live on Facebook Live and on our YouTube channel. We have a legendary coach, Coach Bill Curry. Coach, it's such an honor. We were talking right before the show that I think it was July of 2018, and you came on, and you were fantastic, and I can't believe it's been 2 years since you've been on, but you're all one of our all-time favorite guests, and so glad that you were. Give us the honor to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's great to still be around to come back.
Well, you just told me you're 77 years young. I hope you don't mind, but I was amazed. You look fantastic, and I was telling Coach before the show, guys, that he must stay active because I'm sure you can work circles around me. It doesn't take much.
Well, just think about it. Imagine I played offensive center for 20 years, and my job was to hike the ball and be run over slowly. But just think about how many times I was hit in the head. So when you think about that, then you realize you need to get out and keep the blood circulating so that stuff doesn't stop up there where all those bruises and knots are. So there's a strong incentive to keep moving.
No doubt. Coach, we had a big show last week. I was telling you before we started on legendary Coach Pat Dye, unfortunately passing away at the age of 80 on June 1, and had a big show. What were your thoughts on Coach Pat Dye?
Well, he was a great player first. First time I ever saw him, he was a senior at Georgia, and I was a senior in high school. I was on the sideline. The game was in Athens, so I was in the stands. My father had gone to Georgia, and my grandparents lived over there, and everybody assumed that I would go there. I was really very interested in them, but the score of the game was 7-6, and Pat Dye blocked the extra point, and he came off the corner to do it. And how many people take an offensive guard and put him on the outside because he can run like a corner? He was like lightning. That just struck me. That was my first impression. And then from then on, it was all downhill for me because I ended up coaching against him, and we got our you-know-what kicked every time. I don't think we ever beat Pat Dye. And if he decided to run the triple option, they ran it well enough to win. And if they decided to go away from the triple option and throw the football, they did that well enough to win. He just had a gift for coaching ball, and he added a lot to our game.
Coach, you coached against Pat at I guess when you were at Alabama and he was at Auburn. Were you at Kentucky when he was at Auburn also?
No, I was at Georgia Tech when he was at Auburn, and then I was at Alabama.
Okay.
And we came close several times, but we never beat him. Okay. He did a great job with his team.
He really kind of flipped that Alabama Auburn rivalry. I mean, before he got there, it was so one sided in favor of Alabama.
Well, yeah, he did that. He and Ray Perkins were 2-2, but then when it flipped is when I was there because we were 0-3, and I'm not proud of that at all. Every one of the games was close, but you got to win. And that business over there, if you're the coach at one of those schools, you better win. And he did, and we didn't.
Talk about how hard is it to coach in the SEC? I know that, for example, David Cutcliffe, I hope it's okay to tell the story, but I know his wife loves him being coaching at Duke because at one time when he was at Ole Miss, they had four sell signs like they were selling their house. And as great a coach as he is, and I think he did a fantastic job in Mississippi at Ole Miss, just goes to show you that the pressure you have of being a coach in the SEC, it really stuck with me when I heard that story.
Well, when I played, Georgia Tech was in the SEC, so I've always loved the league, and I've always thought it was the toughest and the best league. So I love the competition, even though it is hard. Yeah, it's hard. Anything that's worth doing is hard. So it was a thrill to get back in the SEC and to do our best to try to represent what football is supposed to look like. And we always hoped that we could do better, but it was not to be. And at Kentucky, we came close. But if you want to find out what you're made of, then you go up against the best. And sometimes what you learn is it's not fun.
Coach, are you, I don't want to say surprised, or what is the word I'm going to look for? I guess I'll go with surprised. Did you think Coach Stoops would be able to stabilize Kentucky football the way he has and win, starting to be long-term there?
I did. I said that when I went there, and the whole time we were there, people said, well, you know, you can't win at Kentucky in football because of basketball. But I think it's just the opposite. I think we were lucky that Rick Pitino was great to us. He would help us get, I mean, we'd have recruits that come in that were big league players, and we knew the only reason they came was because they wanted to go to Rupp Arena and watch the basketball team. But that gave us a chance to recruit them, and we got some of them. I just think, I'm not sure how Stoops is, I'm not sure what he did different than other coaches, but I've always believed that it could be done there. And I think he has, I told him this last week, I went up there for a FCA event. He's got a special gift with those guys. They play really hard, and whatever they have to do, if they have to line up and put a receiver at quarterback, which they did last year, and run him every down, they're still going to give you all you want, and they're going to win more than their share. And he's finding a way to do that, and that's what football coaching should be. So I'm really happy for Mike and his guys that they're getting it done up there. But I've always thought you could do it there.
And one of the reasons, Coach, is it because of the actual – league, the fact that if it's East Carolina or if it's somebody in the ACC and you have a chance to go to Kentucky and play in the SEC against, when you're talking about great competition, doesn't that help you as well, the league you're playing in, if you're recruiting a player?
I think so, and I think it affects the kind of player you get. If there's somebody that thinks it's going to be too hard, that's not who you want. You want the guy who's licking his chops. He can't wait to take on Florida and Tennessee and Alabama and Auburn. It's a mindset. And there are people that have been dominant in the league. Coach Dodd was for a long time. Coach Bryant was for a long time. Coach Jordan was. And then Coach Dye and others, people that do that, you know, they've gone up against the best.
Absolutely. Coach, with COVID-19, I was listening to SiriusXM College ESPNU Radio today, I guess SEC show, and they were talking about regional competition, and they were talking about the leagues. Do you see maybe in the next couple of years where maybe we see another realignment, and this time it's based on maybe financials, where people are saying, well, we can't afford to be in this league because we're flying thousands of miles for all our different teams for this sport and that sport? And they were talking about today about having more maybe regional rivalries again?
Well, that would make a lot of sense financially. And I think there, I don't think it takes a brain surgeon to figure out that an awful lot of the revenue that college sports have enjoyed for the last, gosh, long as we can remember, I think it's going to be a lot different now. I mean, you'd have to be an idiot to not see that. But I mean, even when the stands can fill up again, and none of us knows if and when that's going to happen, even when they can fill up again, I think that folks have gotten used to watching things on television. And I think people will find out that it's pretty fun to stay home and be able to run to the refrigerator every 5 minutes rather than having to fight the crowd and go up to the nosebleed section and make noise for your team. I hope I'm wrong, because I don't want the stands to empty. I don't want the stands to be half full. I mean, I want the big house and all the different great stadiums all over America to fill up again. But I think it's going to be harder than it has ever been before.
No, I'm with you. And I think, unfortunately, I think people around Babe's age and my age are the last generation that really cares about being there. Everybody younger than us seems to be so locked into convenience and social media that, you know, even when they're there, they're playing on their phone about 50% of the time.
Well, I was going to bring that up. I mean, you see people sitting in the stands in Green Bay, Wisconsin, on the 50-yard line, and they're staring at their phone. They're not watching Aaron Rodgers. My gosh, you know, it's like you say, your age group. That I don't know quite exactly what age y'all are, but I mean, you're young, but you're not too young, and you've been around. You've seen enough of the real thing to know that that is really the most fun.
Exactly.
Coach, I was telling them when I was going to East Carolina, I'm 47. So in the 90s, when I was going there, early to mid 90s, we didn't have internet. We didn't have a lot of the stuff now, exactly what you're talking about. And so like now there's a lot of the three guys on this podcast. We go to the ball games. If we're playing Podunk State or whoever we're playing. And then there's some people, they only go because it's the big ACC school we're playing, or it's some regional rivalry, or it's, Cincinnati, a big name.
Yeah,
Cincinnati, UCF, the best, teams in our league in the American. But it's not because of we're going there to watch East Carolina football. It's because of whatever other school, maybe more casual fans. But I do agree with you, Coach. I heard back in 2014, I was asking about what it would cost to have the whole network for the whole stadium as far as the internet is concerned. And I think that was back then, that was 6 years ago, it was about $8 million it would cost the university. And I was saying, well, and in our case, we're hardcore fans, but there are a lot of people that we're trying to get that. And in addition to that, the millennials and even the 20-something, the college-age kids now, that if they don't have some of these luxuries that we take for granted, I guess we don't care about as much, then they're not going to come.
Well, they've been brought up. They've been trained that this is their birthright. They're supposed to get all this stuff, and it's not their fault. If you want to blame somebody, you have to blame not my generation, because I'm still trying to figure out how to use this phone. But I mean, the generation that really understands the technology, like my son and daughter, it's their generation. It's their fault.
We have a comment we put up on the screen for you from Craig Utt, one of our viewers. He said, Coach Curry is the best. I never forgot him showing up at our house in Vidalia, Georgia, to recruit my brother Ben and wearing the Super Bowl rings. Great coach, better person.
The Utts are wonderful folk. That was a special time. I was an assistant coach at Tech at the time, and Craig is the younger brother of Ben Utt. I think he's younger, and Ben is this big old 6 foot. I say big, 6'4", 195 pounds. He wasn't big enough, and the other coaches on the staff kept saying, "Well, what's he going to play?" I said, "I don't know. He's going to play something though, because he's a straight A student, and he'll knock your teeth out." And that's the kind of guy we need to get. And so there was a little skepticism, but they finally decided, "Okay, old Ben, we'll give him a scholarship." By the time Ben was a sophomore, he was 235, and he was a starting offensive guard. And by the time he was senior, he was 290. And when he started 8 years in a row for the Indianapolis Colts, he was about 300 pounds. And he is just a great person. He's back, and he's done very well in business. And so we love all the Utts.
Coach, I don't know if Kyle remembers, but we had you on before. I know you talked about Coach Lombardi. But there in Green Bay, and yeah, I heard you say Green Bay, it brought that to mind. I know that he was very hard on you, right? I remember we talked about that a couple years ago.
You could say he was hard on us, yeah. Henry Jordan's great statement, our Hall of Fame defensive tackle, was that he was a real wit. He never said this in front of Coach, but he'd sit in the back of the locker room and he'd say, he treats us all the same, like dogs. That was the standard line that Henry used, but Lombardi was interested in one thing, and he was interested in maximizing every ounce of your energy. Bart Starr went running out of the first quarterback meeting when Lombardi reported in 1959 and called his wife. This is after 1 hour with this young guy from the New York Giants with an Italian name. And Bart calls his wife Cherry and says, "We're going to win. She said, "What do you mean? You don't even know the guy yet." He said, "I know the guy. We're going to win." What Lombardi had done is walked in the first meeting and he had said, "We are going to strive for perfection. Because we're human beings, we're never going to achieve perfection. But in striving for perfection, we will capture excellence, and we're going to do it all day, every day. And nothing will keep us from reaching that." And somehow that reached inside the hearts of those guys. And everybody who came through there learned the same lessons. And he just had that capacity. And plus he was brilliant. He was a genius. And he could reach inside your soul and make you do things you didn't think you could do. And that's what great coaches are for.
Speaking of great coaches, Coach, you had a hand in building the Georgia State program down in Atlanta, and John Elliott's doing a good job there now. They got their own stadium there. The old Turner Field is now Georgia State's football stadium, and the Pirates take on the Georgia State Panthers in non-conference game this year, provided he gets played down in Atlanta. What do you think about the state of Georgia State football right now, year four for Coach Elliott, taking them to two bowl games in 2 to 3 years, and they got a lot coming back?
Well, Sean's done several things that had to be done. One was to go into a SEC stadium and beat somebody. And when they beat Tennessee, that was nothing fluky about that. I was at home that day because I wanted to watch it. And you could ask my wife, who refuses to watch football. She said, "I've watched 700 football games with you. I'm not watching another one unless I just really want to." So she's back there reading books or something, and I start yelling. And I said, "Come here, you got to watch this." She said, "Well, it's the middle of the first quarter." I said, "I don't care. We're going to beat the Vols today because we are whipping them at the line of scrimmage." And that's what Sean had done. Sean had an offensive line last year that was and a terrific quarterback in Ellington. I wish he was going to come back. They are keeping him as an assistant coach. But the other thing they have is some of the stuff you have to get the better players in this part of the world, and that is a gorgeous stadium. That stadium, what I can't believe what they've done with that thing, and I'd love to take credit. I had nothing to do with it. It was all after we left. But they took the Braves Stadium and turned it into one of the most beautiful football venues. I think it's 44,000, so it's perfect size because you don't want to be bouncing around the 60,000-seat stadium that you can't fill up. You want to be eventually be able to fill it up, and I think they will. And I think it's going to continue to add a great deal to the campus. But don't ever forget this about Georgia State. The only reason they had a football program is because the students demanded it. And they got 53,000 students. So the tough thing for those kids is they all work and they have to work on Saturdays. And I'd go around and say, "Come on, come to the game Saturday." "Well, coach, I got to go 10 bar. I can't come, but we'll be pulling for you." So I think the kids will start coming more and more, and it'll continue to build.
Now, Georgia State, is their campus?
Oh, and another thing, the guys that came there with our first bunch, virtually all of them have graduated. That's the thing I'm most proud of.
Is Georgia State's campus, without having been on the campus, is it kind of right in the middle of the city, and is it more of a community, or is it dorms?
Kyle, you broke up a little bit on that.
I said, without having been on their campus, I said, is Georgia State's campus kind of in the middle of the city?
It's smack in the middle of the city. And I grew up, my wife and I both grew up with her mom and my dad worked in downtown Atlanta every day. They both rode the trolley from College Park, Georgia, and would go to downtown. And in those days, downtown was magic. It was all kind of, it was like Disney World or something. Beautiful theaters and something always going on, and something fun. And then, of course, it went away. It became a ghost land. And Georgia State has given it a lot of life back. It's just it's a great thing for all concerned. Georgia State graduates more minority students than any college in America other than historically black universities and colleges. Wow. And so it's a great social service, giving kids an opportunity to go to school, because you can work your way through that place, and you don't have to have big bucks to do it.
Coach, I had a question as far as what I'm impressed with is you built a program, and you look at the likes of, I know you're a Georgia Tech guy, you have Georgia, you have all the schools in the SEC, and then there's Georgia State, and all of a sudden what's great. I've always loved underdogs, and I'm glad the Pirates have a chance to play Georgia State. I'll ask me after October that game. But anyway, the fact that you built that program, you've got to be proud of the success, the stadium. What's next? What do you see next? You're a visionary. What's next for the Panthers?
Well, they have to win consistently, and they need to stack some more big wins. And we started off immediately giving ourselves a chance and getting our nose bloodied. But I mean, if you go to Alabama, and we went to Tennessee early, either our second or third year, and we got whipped both of those. But the guys were so happy to be there. I mean, I had kids, I thought they'd be intimidated and I was going to have to pump them up. They're running up to me in warmups with tears in their eyes saying, "God, coach, thanks for bringing us up." They couldn't wait to try to see if they could take those guys on. Well, they still have that attitude, and now they're better players. They're bigger, faster, stronger. So I think they got to beat some big schools. They got to prove that they can win consistently, and they've got to continue to grow the bowl thing. And when they get to the bowl, to win the game.
I think another thing that's pretty cool is Georgia Southern moved up to FBS, you know, after being dominant along with App State and SoCon and joined the Sun Belt. So now you got a rivalry building there between Georgia Southern and Georgia State.
Yeah, and rivalries are not rivalries unless both teams are capable of winning. And so if Georgia Southern was still just hammering Georgia State, then it wouldn't be a rivalry. But Georgia State has won some of those games. And so then people get their teeth set, and it's fun. I mean, people start to really get into the rivalry. And it's who is the real GSU? That's a good question.
Now, Coach Curry, a moment ago, you were talking about your Green Bay Packer experience, and you referenced, you used that word, locker room. One of the things that I've really liked that I've seen from former players and coaches, current players and coaches here over the last 2 or 3 weeks with everything that's going on in our world is just talking about how the football locker room, if our society and our world was more like most football locker rooms, we would all be better off and the world would be a better place. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are many, and it changed my life, because when I reported to the Green Bay Packers in 1965, I'd never been in a huddle with an African-American person. Never. I mean, I had played in a couple of all-star games and maybe a few plays, but I mean, on a team. And I thought those guys, and Vince Lombardi was famous for a lot of things, but his greatest asset is that he would not tolerate racism at all. Because he'd been discriminated against, and he knew it because he was an Italian Catholic. People told him, "You'll never be a head coach. Forget it. We're not going to hire you. You're Catholic. You're Italian." Well, he remembered that stuff, and he wouldn't tolerate any kind of racism or prejudice. So we have more African-American players than most. And but they didn't abuse me, or they didn't beat up on me or give me a hard time. They embraced me, especially Willie Davis, the defensive captain, taught me how to talk. What are the things you say if you're a Southern boy, a Southern white boy? What are the things you better not say? I didn't know. I thought I'd probably say something racist, and I did. And but rather than to respond with anger, they said, all right, now think. Now, listen, don't say that. Say this. And they literally changed my life forever. That's what can happen in a locker room. Look, I could go and be a college coach, which this is something I enjoyed doing. I could take a kid from South Central Los Angeles and a kid from the hills of North Georgia, and they've been raised by our sick culture to hate each other's guts, right? They don't listen to the same kind of music. They don't go to the same kind of church. They don't talk the same way. They don't comb their hair the same way. They think they're supposed to hate each other. They're 17 years old and they're babies, but they're 300 pounds and they can run. And somebody told them they're going to play in the NFL. I can take those two guys and put them next to each other in the locker room. And remember your football experience. We can't even get our shirt on in football without our teammate helping us. We can't get our shirt off without our teammate helping us. And I've had those guys come to me and say, I'm not dressing next to him, coach. I say, oh, yes, you are. They say, you can't do that. I say, I can do anything I want to. I'm the head coach. You can go home if you want to, or you can stay and be on our team. But you're going to dress where I tell you. And guess what? They find out the sweat smells the same on everybody. And they get busted in the mouth, and that blood that's coming out, it's the same. And after a while, they realize not only do they not hate each other, they love each other. They help each other through the hardest drills in the world. Football is the most demanding sport in the world because every player needs every teammate on every play just to survive, especially if you're in a tough league. And those guys that thought they hated each other, they end up loving each other. And it lasts the rest of their life. And my greatest joy is that I hear from them pretty much every day now. I didn't expect that. And that's one of my great, aside from my family, that's my greatest joy is hearing from those guys.
Yeah, Coach, you have a lot of sons, right?
Yeah, I do.
No, Dave, what I was going to follow up with here in the last couple of days, I saw a little 10-minute clip on ESPN. Very good. I had not seen it before or heard of the story on the Black 14 at Wyoming there in like 68 or 69. That was a tremendous clip.
Yeah, that's a great story, and that's the kind of thing. That's another kind of thing that can happen in our sport.
Coach Curry, we have one of our top fans, one of our friends, James Curry, James Smith, who said, Coach Curry, I loved you on ESPN.
Oh, thank you. ESPN was a great experience. I get a chance to critique the coaches. I got criticized by my bosses. They said, we want you to be harder on the coaches. I said, well, you got the wrong guy. I'm not going to get somebody fired because that board of trustees listens to those broadcasters. When you start saying somebody's a bad coach, you're talking about taking his job. And so, but I love critiquing the games, and I'm so glad, James, I think that was your name. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I loved doing those broadcasts.
Coach, got to hear you do several East Carolina games over the years. What are your thoughts on current East Carolina head coach Mike Houston? I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Well, I'm not. I've lost touch, and I'm embarrassed about that. I can talk a lot about Steve Logan, I'll tell you that. Man, was he fun. It was fun to do games with Logan because you never knew what he was going to do. He was so smart. But we used to say this about a couple of coaches. There were just two or three coaches. And I didn't. This was not original with me. I got this from somebody at ESPN. But we used to say, the rest of those coaches are playing checkers. This guy's playing chess. He's just a different. This guy's got a different level of IQ. But no, I'm sorry. Most of the modern coaches were still in diapers when I was coaching.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, Coach Logan was great. Those were great times when he was here. Obviously, guys like David Garrard played for him, and great memories. One of his former assistants, his O-line coach, I don't know, Georgia boy, you know Steve Shankweiler.
I remember Steve. I've known him for a long time.
He's back on Mike Houston's staff here at East Carolina for his fourth go around with the Pirates.
That's good. It's a beautiful place. I've been invited over there to speak a couple of times to the coaches and the team, and it's one of those places that you don't hear much about, but you probably should.
Yeah, you're right.
We have a comment from a former All-American at East Carolina. I know he a letter winner, the EC wrestling team. Mike Radford said, "What is more bonding, side by side in rice paddies, jungles of South Vietnam, or locker rooms of athletic teams?"
Are you kidding me? Well, when you're in South Vietnam, that's war. That's real. Football is a petting zoo. I mean, we go out there and knock each other around, and then we shake hands. But when you're in war, that's the real thing. So, no, I wouldn't pretend that it's anything like combat. I'm sure combat is the much, much greater bonding place. And God bless all the guys that did that. My dad did it, and wow. No, I wouldn't go there.
Yeah, and oftentimes you hear that comparison of, I've heard several people say it's going to be a war and all that, and you know, they don't mean it like that, but I oftentimes wonder, you know, particularly when you're playing the service academy, if you should use that dialogue.
Yeah, well, in a war, that means somebody's not going to get to go home. And we played a game, and we got up after the game and shook hands. And maybe the worst thing is somebody might shove you in a pileup or kick you in a bad place. That's not war. So let's not kid ourselves.
Exactly.
I'm proud of having had the privilege of playing football. And if I'd have been in combat, I'm sure I would be even much closer to my combat buddies.
Coach, I had one question. Certainly something was brought up this morning. I heard about expanding the playoff teams from 4 to 8. And they're saying now that maybe that won't happen because of COVID-19. Are you in favor of the expansion of the playoff to 8 teams?
Well, I wasn't in favor of the playoff. I think there was a certain purity to college football. Need to turn it into another NFL. Because first of all, you don't have enough players. It's my opinion now. If we added those games and somebody's going to have to play 15 games, then we need to add scholarships because the human body gets beat down. And in the NFL, all you got to do is play football. You're not going to chemistry labs. You're not staying up in the morning and studying for calculus. But the way in college, if you go all the way. And I just think that's not the best use of student athletes' bodies. But nobody cares about that. And so we keep adding, and I think we probably will add teams and play more games. But and I do think that the coronavirus is going to slow that process down by several years.
Coach James had another question. A comment before now. Question, can y'all ask Coach Curry about his win against the Bear in 1981?
Well, that was we got lucky, and that's the truth. I mean, we just got lucky, and Coach Bryant was very gracious until the next year when they came to Grant Field and beat us 42-3. He was still very gracious, but it was very clear who the boss was. We had a real good game in Birmingham, and I remember Ken Wisenhunt made a big play down the sideline, and Alabama didn't have their best day, and it was something we could remember forever.
No doubt about it. And coach, as far as your coaching career, is there anything left in the tank? Is there anything you haven't done as far as football that you would love to do?
Well, if I had a chance, I'd love to beat Auburn at something sometime if we had to play badminton or something. But because they were just tough on us wherever we were coaching. But I think at my age and stage, I just thank God that I got the privilege of working with thousands and thousands of great young people, and a few of them were females. I mean, females worked in our daughter worked in a couple of our programs in sports information, and the ladies would help in the assistant trainers, or in the equipment room. So it was male and female, obviously many more males, and to have been a part of their lives is next to my faith and family. That's the best thing that ever happened to me.
Absolutely. Bobby, did you have anything to say, Coach?
Yeah, as we're wrapping this up, Coach, I know 2 years ago when you were on, we mentioned his name, and he's certainly one of our favorites at East Carolina. He was on Skip Holt's staff, Russell McNeil's staff, and also spent 1 year on Scotty Montgomery's staff, and that's, of course, Rick Smith, who was on your staff at the University of Kentucky.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Can you share – do you have a story maybe you could share about Coach Smith or some thoughts?
Well, Rick is just one of the pure, great football coaches and great human beings that I ever had on my staff and anywhere I've ever coached. We brought him from a high school in North Florida to Georgia Tech. And I think he was a volunteer coach the first year. Then he quickly proved himself. But anywhere I ever coached, I had two or three, four guys that I would always look for. Well, where is he? Because if I can get him, I'm going to get him. And Rick was one of those. And I love him like a brother and his whole family, same way. But he can flat coach football.
Yes, yeah, he can. You got to go live.
Yeah, Rick's one of the You never have to wonder where Rick stands on something. He's always going to shoot straight. And his daughter Beth is a fan of the show and love Coach Smith.
We got to get him back on for sure.
Yeah, Rick's a great human being, and all of his family. You're right, Beth and all of them.
Coach, thank you so much for spending the time, and hopefully we get you back on. Maybe it's the time of college football season. What an honor to have you back on, and definitely appreciate the time and the visit. Thank you so much.
Well, that'd be great. Maybe we'd actually have some football to talk about.
It'd be nice.
I would love that.
Yes. Okay. Well, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. God bless you.
Yes,
okay.
God bless you, too. All right, bye-bye, Coach. All right, Coach Bill Curry. Thank you, Coach, for being there. And now we're going to bring in a very special guest, right, Bubba?
Yeah, Hank Harewood. He's an East Carolina alum. There he is. All right. But yeah, in addition to being a Pirate, he has an Elon Law degree and now is the second in command down at Winthrop with the Eagles, the Division I athletic program, of course. Hank, welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, I appreciate you having me. I was excited. I figured, boy, the lack of sports is hurting everybody. You know, when you guys have to call me for content, you just must be hurting. But I'm glad that you had me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk. Of course, Bob, always glad to get the chance to talk to you and Kyle and Dave. Great to see you guys as well.
Yeah, Hank, it's not bad to have Bill Curry as your opener next, huh?
You know, I was thinking about that coming on. So I was at FIU in 2015. I think it was Miguel Hernandez was there. I was at FIU, the big baseball fundraiser, and the baseball coach, famous college baseball coach, Turtle Thomas, was speaking, and he and I were good friends. And he was introducing the administrators and skipped over me on accident, went ahead to some of our honored guests, and it was I think Miggy was there. And then he saw me and said, Hank Harrell, our associate athletic director, is here as well. And then he kept going down the line, and the next person was Charles Johnson, the famous catcher. And I looked at my wife and I said, that's probably the only time I'll be introduced between two guys like that ever again. So here I am following Coach Curry, and that's a big honor for sure.
Absolutely, Hank. We want to have you on. One of the things that we pride ourselves on is a great guest, and you're another one. And certainly we have people say to us on the street all the time that find out who we are, or the people that do know us, how in the world do you get the great guests? And I said, well, Bubba has worked his tail off, and I know Kyle loves wrestling. So whenever we get a wrestling guest, we lean on him, find a wrestling guest and different ones. And the fact that you have an East Carolina connection, can you talk about that first off?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I love the podcast. I've listened quite a bit, so I love it. I love to be on here. And East Carolina connection, to say the least, I've got East Carolina family. My parents have both been in Greenville for well over 40 years, 10 at East Carolina. My mom didn't graduate. Dad did. My dad later worked there for a while. Aunt and uncle met there. My brother and I both went there, graduated from there. I love East Carolina. One of my favorite stats, I used to share people more often than I do now, but from 1991, that Peach Bowl year, from 1991 until I moved away in 2013 from North Carolina, I did not miss an East Carolina home game. So a little ECU connection, ECU family for sure. And that's obviously something Bubba and I bond over, and my wife. She was really patient with me the first several years we were dating when I, from law school, would drag her back over to Greenville for football games because she was also an East Carolina alum and a really big fan.
And Elon, being where you got your law degree, that the great football program there as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And aside from that, some really, really wonderful people in that athletics department. Really talented athletic director and really wonderful people around him that are just good folks. So I had a great opportunity when I was in law school to work in that athletics department for about a year. The guy I worked for is still there. We still talk regularly. He's a great, great guy. And so are a lot of other people over there. So fond memories at Elon Athletics as well.
Talk about what you're up to now. Certainly with there's so many Division I's. I was talking to Bubba about that earlier today. I'm very proud of the fact that North Carolina, so many great schools in North Carolina Division I. It's amazing. It's almost like we're up there with the big boys as far as states of California and Texas and Florida. The number of Division I schools we have is amazing.
Yeah, tons in North Carolina, and Winthrop is actually just over the line in Rock Hill, South Carolina.
That's right, South Carolina.
But hey, a lot of great schools in South Carolina as well. Growing up in North Carolina, I was a typical North Carolina sports kid, right? And so I always watched the ACC tournament, though I did not root hard like a lot of other kids in elementary school. Like I said, my parents were East Carolina folks, so were my aunt and uncle. I was born and raised in Greenville, a lot of purple and gold in my life. And so, I remember watching that, and oftentimes, by the time the ACC basketball tournament had rolled around, I was heavily invested in Pirate baseball. So, really special sports scene, really unbelievable schools, and really schools at all levels that are doing a terrific job, right? There's obviously the Titans, North Carolina, and Duke. But then, boy, you look around and Appalachian State and what they've done, incredible program, incredible leadership. Mike Hill at Charlotte is a friend and, in my opinion, one of the most talented athletic directors I've ever been around. Obviously, East Carolina and what East Carolina does, I'm very familiar with. So, there's just a lot of depth, like you mentioned. And then in South Carolina, right, real similar. There's South Carolina and Clemson, but then there's unbelievable programs all over the place past that with Coastal, College of Charleston, Citadel. I mean, a really rich area, Charleston Southern, who's in our league in the Big South Conference, down in Charleston. And then USC Upstate's been a great addition. They're not far from us, play some good hoops. And somebody who knows the East Carolina Athletic Director real well is the AD at USC Upstate. They're doing a great job. And we're lucky at Winthrop to kind of fit in. I love the athletics history of Winthrop.
We lose Hank?
Yeah, it's kind of lagging there a second. We'll see if we can. He's in mid-thought there. I guess it's almost like we hit pause.
Yeah,
there. get him back here in a second.
Hey, if you can hear us, you're froze on our end. All right, let's see what we got.
Hank, are you still there?
Yeah, you guys got me?
All right, there we go.
You're back. All right. Sorry about that. I got you now. My wife's back there working, too, and I have to tell her to get off the internet. you know, and I'm glad at Winthrop we have the opportunity to kind of fit in where we do and where we can. Great basketball tradition, great baseball tradition, really strong programs there now, and just really strong athletics across the board. But I tell everybody, you know, I love Winthrop so much because the campus culture, the things we're about as an institution go so much deeper than what may meet the eye traditionally in athletics. And I love being able to be a part of that. And, you know, I think what any of us ever want professionally, right, is to do things we're invested in and care about and believe in, and to do that with people that, you know, we like. And so I have unbelievable.
We lost him again.
Yeah, we'll see if we can.
The bandwidth down in Rock Hill is not so good of a
delay. Here we go.
There we go. We got you.
I might need to restart my internet there. I've never had issues. Of course, I'd wait till tonight to give me some trouble. But
it seems like
that's the way it goes. Yeah, Hank, my dog hasn't barked yet.
Hank, how's the obvious question? How is COVID-19 affecting Winthrop athletics?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's affecting everybody in a lot of different ways. You know, I think everybody on a macro level is thinking about the kind of the economic fallout, what will eventually happen from a financial standpoint. You know, all schools are worried about that. Big schools are worried about NCAA distributions, probably ticket sales, those kind of things. Big football schools, I mean, schools like Winthrop, you know, we're worried about donations. We're worried about ticket sales. We're worried about that kind of thing. But really on a more micro level, our day-to-day is really consumed with the health and safety of our student-athletes. So that's been, for the past few months, that has been really what we've focused on, making sure that we've invested the right way and being able to bring our student-athletes back and make sure they're safe, make sure they're healthy, really make sure that we provide them with opportunities to still compete but do it in a safe way. And so, you know, at Winthrop, we have a COVID athletics task force. Myself and our head athletic trainer chair that. And it involves a couple of folks on campus, as well as different people in the athletics department, our team physician, those kind of folks. And we're just getting as much info as we can, just like everybody. You know, it's you make a plan and you take a couple of days and make a really good plan, and then everything changes. And so you make another plan and you just kind of keep moving and doing what you can. And there's a lot of reading. There's a lot of stuff that you've got to pay attention to, trying to stay up to date. That's really the hardest thing, right, is it's unique in that reacting to the info isn't the difficult thing, but getting up to date information is the harder thing to do. So, you know, when you pay attention to, you know, all kinds of news, sports isn't immune from that, right? You turn on one news station and they're saying one thing. You turn on another news station, they're saying something else. And so, we've tried to take guidance from the NCAA. We've tried to listen to our healthcare partners, Atrium Health. We have incredible healthcare partners with them. So we've tried to take advice and listen to them. We've tried to, you know, listen to guidance put out by the national office from the NCAA, that kind of thing, and really push forward focusing on the health and safety of our student athletes. And obviously coming up here in a couple months, we'll be focused on return to play, which is an entirely different kind of beast. You know, we've got to figure out how comfortable we are, you know, having guests on our campus and having our student athletes go to other campus and having all that contact. And, you know, you've got to remember, are you providing a safe and healthy environment for your student athletes? But aside from that, are you doing it for your staff, right? You know, we've got a building full of staff and athletics department and a campus full of staff, not just in athletics, but faculty and other places on campus. And you got to keep them safe too. And so sending your student athletes to other places and asking them to go play, or are they contracting COVID anywhere? Have they been anywhere that maybe isn't as dialed in as we are on COVID? And, you know, everybody's trying, but, you know, the more you kind of give your student athletes the ability to go off into the world, the more they can bring COVID back to your campus, and it can really have negative effects on your staff and coaches and all kinds of folks. So, you know, you're focusing on that, but you're listen, at the end of the day, we want to provide an educational experience for our students, and we want to provide an athletics experience for them. So we're still working through trying to figure out how to do that some days. And we have some student athletes back participating in voluntary workouts. This summer's unique. They can't have mandatory workouts yet. I do think that day is coming from the NCAA very soon, but they can't have required workouts yet with coaches. But we're having a lot of voluntary stuff, so we've got a lot of procedures in place to make sure our student athletes that are back for voluntary stuff are safe and that they're screened when they come into the facility and that kind of thing.
Yeah, East Carolina said for football it's going to be around for mandatory it's going to be around July 7th.
So I think it'll be interesting. The Competition Oversight Committee, I know, had a call today, and council meets this week as well. So the council steering committee will have some stuff, I'm sure. I think total guess. I'm not in the know on any of that stuff. I know a lot of people that are, but I haven't talked to them. My guess would be that July 7th or 13th would be the accurate dates for, again, those required workouts with coaches. But, you know, that said, you've still got a lot of student athletes that are taking part in voluntary workouts, which are really just slightly different. Strength and conditioning coaches can still be there. They just can't report back to the accountable coach who was there and that kind of thing. You know, so as far as those required workouts, I think they're coming real soon. But a lot of schools have gone ahead and kicked the voluntary workouts in gear, which has given campuses a good opportunity, too, to see, hey, what are we set up to handle from a COVID standpoint, and how are we going to keep our students generally safe? So it's been a good thing.
Are you guys testing? I mean, I don't know if this is something you can say. Are you guys testing?
Yeah, no, we can talk about it. So we're a little bit in the minority, I think, in that we didn't test everybody when they report for voluntary activity, but that is because we haven't had anybody come back. So we realized, you know, South Carolina opened up a while ago with gyms. And so we realized that our student athletes that were in our locale, they were going to the gym, right? The gyms opened up. And so they said, well, I'm going to go to the hitting facility. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to go play basketball. I'm going to do whatever it is I do. And so we decided that it would be way safer to have our student athletes in a controlled environment, right? Instead of letting them go out into the public gyms where you can't control who else is there. You can't control how clean it is or anything like that. We allow them access to our facilities so that we can control kind of all those variables. So when they came back for that, we did not test. Now we'll bring back for mandatory workouts when that's allowed by the NCAA. And at that point, we'll certainly test anybody who's symptomatic or anybody who's been exposed to anybody who has been symptomatic or anybody who's been in a hotspot. So we haven't finished nailing that down. It will very likely look like we will, a question from my guy, Will Lana there. It'll very likely look like we'll test those who have a reason to test. We won't test everybody. Why? That test is often good until they walk back out the door, right? We have student athletes who live with family members. We have student athletes who work. We have student athletes who live with non-student athletes. And so, you know, that test is really only good up until they leave. And so we're still working through that stuff, again, with our healthcare partners. You know, and look, if our healthcare partners say, hey, by far the best move is to test every single person who's going to come into your facility, of course we'll do that. But as we work through that, you know, I'm sure we'll figure that piece out as far as required testing.
And of course, you see the comment there from Will Landon. I guess you know him. It says, "Hank, what is your craziest story from your career in compliance in the NCAA?"
You know, that's there's so many angles the compliance piece can take. And I used to do so much compliance. Will, appreciate the question, man. Glad you're listening. Will Landon and I were best buds growing up, still good friends. Have known each other for good grief, 25 years or so now. So, you know, I don't know about the craziest story I've had from a compliance standpoint. Having been out of compliance, being the deputy AD now, I don't do our day-to-day compliance, though I do oversee it. You know, I think you have some of those things that are stories that don't seem strange to me that would to other people. We've done some crazy waivers. You know, I think that's the big thing. We've gotten waivers done for kids, and that's something I believe strongly in is finding ways to get kids out there, right, that may not meet eligibility rules or they may not meet initial eligibility rules. We've done some really crazy waivers. But, again, I think athletics provides a great access to higher education for a lot of people. And so, you know, if you don't meet eligibility standards or initial eligibility or whatever it is, we'll do everything we can to get you out there. You know, here and there, let's face it, sometimes compliance people when I was doing compliance every day. Sometimes compliance people are not everyone's favorite person in the athletics department. I worked really, really hard to make sure that my coaches always knew I was on their side, that I was there to help them, not hurt them. Sometimes you have schools will you know, anonymously email your conference or you and say, hey, your coaches are doing X, Y, and Z. And, you know, I made sure they knew that I viewed the predominant part of my job as defense attorney against that kind of stuff, not as prosecutor about other stuff that they may be doing wrong. There's just different thought processes to compliance. I think road games are always great, right? I mean, obviously, as an administrator, I would never talk to fans or anything like that. But, we've had some neat road game wins at different places. Basketball games at Gardner-Webb back with Chris Holtman and his group when they were there had some really great road wins. The Big South's an incredible basketball league. At Louisiana Monroe, certainly going on the road in the Sun Belt with football was really fun. We had an unbelievable team coached by Todd Berry, who's still an unbelievable person. I mean, you talk about A-plus people, Todd Berry, he's the executive director of the AFCA now, spent some time in Greenville, was later the head coach at Army. He was the head coach at Louisiana Monroe when I was there. And we played some money games, so we had some tough ones. I think one of my funnest moments was when I walked out of the tunnel at Oklahoma onto the field. I was so early in my athletics career when that happened. That was kind of one of those first, like, man, this is really cool. We later that year had a huge win at Wake Forest, which was a lot of fun. Came back to my home state, obviously. And I was right there when the two-point conversion attempt, I think, kind of just fell through the guy from Wake's hands. Tons of fun. So, admittedly, even though you'd obviously never talk to a fan or anything, it is still tons of fun to be on a sideline or on a bench in an away gym or an away stadium and get a good result. Of course, I had a lot of good memories as an East Carolina fan doing that in away games as well.
Hank, you weren't there. I'm trying to remember my years run together. I don't think Coach Berry was there yet. If he was, I'm not sure. Was Coach Berry there, and were you there?
The Logan years.
When they upset Alabama?
I don't know if Coach Berry was there. That was well before my time there. The year before I got there, I think they had just beaten Arkansas.
So whatever year that was.
Yeah. 07, 08. I think that was just before Coach Berry got there, but I'm not sure. But again, they had some big wins. We opened up the year I was at Louisiana Monroe. We opened up on the road at Oklahoma. We had all-conference quarterback coming back, unbelievable player, a lot of great players from a really successful season the year before. Unfortunately, I think the quarterback was a little banged up that kind of got us, unable to get anything going offensively, which obviously hurts your defense a lot the more they're out there. But, we were excited about a lot of those games. Coach Berry did a great job down there when he was at Louisiana Monroe. And a lot of ECU ties on that staff. Jason Nichols was on that staff. I remember I'm so thankful I got to spend so much time with him down there, another incredible guy. So was there for some really good games, but was not there for that one specifically.
When you deal with compliance, obviously you're dealing with players, coaches. Do you have to deal with fans and boosters with compliance issues?
Yeah, and it varies what school you're at, right? Schools with you're looking at different stuff depending on the size of school you're at, right, and what programs you're dealing with. Obviously, you're a little more concerned about men's basketball and football from a booster involvement standpoint, but you certainly do. When I was in charge of compliance at FIU, that's 56,000 students, 12,000 full-time faculty and staff right in the heart of Miami. There's a lot of stuff that can go wrong down there. And so, that's a place where you have to deal a lot with fans and boosters. You also deal a lot with pro guys and agents down there. We had a number of really good football players when I was down there, a lot of baseball players that were really good as well. So you have to deal with all that. I was really fortunate at FIU, had a strong staff of people that worked with me in compliance. So that's part of it. Now at Winthrop, right, we don't have as many issues with donors and boosters, and we've got a really engaged fan base at Winthrop, but I've made it a point to make sure that I know them and they know me. And so, again, I don't do our day-to-day compliance, but do oversee some of it. And so a little bit here and there, we're engaged with it. Obviously, at UNC Charlotte, they brought football on just a couple years before I went up to Charlotte. My wife and I decided to come back to North Carolina. You know, obviously you're working with some donors and that kind of thing. Folks are so excited for football. You know, you had to consistently, you know, remind guys, hey, as much as the NCAA has moved forward as an association and a lot of rules, a lot of that booster stuff just hasn't, right? So in theory, if I go into the local diner and somebody says, boy, Hank, great game last Saturday, meals on us. You know, in theory, that's something that's not permissible, right? And so we're constantly reminding folks, hey, you can't go take this free meal. You can't go take this or that. And I have friends at big Power Five football schools, and their problems are totally different, right? You know, they're in the parking lot after practice seeing who's driving what car and that kind of thing. You know, I've never been in a situation like that. You know, but again, you are in situations where you have to remind folks, hey, you can't go get free meals. You know, they can't hire you to help move for a Saturday and pay you $500, that kind of thing. So yeah, you deal with those kind of things, but it varies a lot depending on what level you're at as well.
I have a compliance question then. And I think I know the answer, and Bubba may have asked you this off the air, but let's say there was this podcast or a radio show, or maybe it was a TV show, some media, and they wanted to have a kid who's verbally committed to East Carolina or UNC or App State on their show, and they happen to be a Booster Club member. Would that be permissible or not?
Yeah, I'd have to look at the exact rule to figure out where I'd hang my hat, but I would tell you as a general rule, I would always, always discourage booster conduct or booster contact of a PSA. And so if it were Winthrop, right, you know, and you said, hey, you guys have signed this kid, he's coming in to play hoops for you all, we're big Winthrop, you know, big Winthrop supporters, are in the Eagle Club, we'd love to have him on the show. I haven't looked at that in a while, but my first reaction would be to have great discomfort in encouraging donor and booster contact with a PSA. So again, I'd have to look at it to tell you for sure, and I'd be happy to do that. But my initial reaction would be, man, I don't think we want to get in a spot where we're encouraging our donors to reach out to our PSAs. We generally try to tell donors and boosters, the legislative term for it is representative of athletics interest. We usually try to tell folks to let our coaches do the recruiting. I'd probably discourage that, but would have to look at it kind of on a case by case basis.
It's kind of what
so I can't get my I can't get my briefcase of cash to the kid.
You can't even talk to him on the show, Dave, let alone your briefcase of cash.
Yeah, still avoid the briefcases of cash are generally still not a good thing. Dave, at least not for institutions.
If you want, Dave, I'll hold that briefcase of cash for you. And then you can, you know, I'll just hold it for you.
I was gonna say, you know, it's not great for institutions, but maybe great for the kids.
The reason I bring that up is I was talking to a guy that we have on the podcast a lot. And back in the day, with all the 30 for 30s we see on SMU and different things of how they carried themselves, that's why I brought it up, that very thing. The question I want to ask you, Hank, being you're in the business, have we gotten better, or are people just getting better at being more discreet about the, hey, here's the $100,000 to come to our school? I mean, you hear stories all the time.
Yeah, I think both. You know, obviously the FBI deal was absolute bombshell for anybody who didn't already know that was going on, you know, and
I think we lost Tank again momentarily. Hopefully he'll come back like he did before.
Yeah. I think he'll
come back. Hey, got me?
Yep.
So, obviously that was, you know, the men's basketball FBI deal was a bombshell, right? For those who didn't kind of already know what was going on, that was the worst kept secret in the world. Now that said, I do think a lot of that stuff has calmed down. And then I think there's lots of coaches out there now who just say it's not worth it. I'm not going to cheat. That's the big thing, right? There's a lot of coaches and knowing a lot of folks that are unbelievable people and wouldn't do it. And so I think that combined with the fact that, listen, compliance has become big business. You know, at FIU, it was me and four other full-time folks, and two of them were attorneys. You know, at Charlotte, it was me and three other folks. And, you know, we always had an intern who was a law student or an attorney or something like that. So, you know, at some of the bigger schools, you're talking 8, 10, or 12 folks in a compliance department. You know, compliance has become big business. And I think that's kind of helped with it a lot, too. And then obviously the NCAA working group that's worked through some of the issues with men's basketball has really, really helped. So do I think those things, those kind of big hey, here's a duffel bag of cash, they'd probably still go on. I mean, listen, we'd be naive to think that nobody ever cheats anymore, right? I do think it happens, but I certainly kind of you hear those legendary stories about SMU or about UCLA when Kareem was there, right? Those kind of things. I don't know that they happen, but then again, somebody may listen to this and chuckle and think, yeah, it does. You know, I'll say that. I'm not aware of it happening.
I guess the rule was passed. They passed the rule, or am I dreaming? The players can be compensated now for their likeness and basically.
Not yet.
That's an ongoing saga. So what they did pass was a resolution to commit to passing rules that allowed players to be, you know, paid for their name, image, and likeness. And that's been on the heels, obviously. I teach a graduate sports law course at a different university, too. We talk about that all the time, right? There have been just a number of cases about that. And so, no, have they passed the specific legislation? No, like everything else, you know, NCAA, we've got a working group, and we're working on that as a membership. And it's obviously been, pushed forward a lot quicker because a lot of states just said, fine, we're going to take matters into our own hand. California, I think, started that trend a while ago. And I think within a couple months, there was something like 28 or 30 states who had proposed similar legislation. So we don't know exactly what the legislation is going to look like. It's not passed or in place yet, but certainly within the next 12 months, that'll be something that I think is done. And who knows how it looks? It's one of those things that I think there's a lot of folks that support. There's still some people that have some questions and concerns about it. It reminds me a lot of 1984 Oklahoma Board of Regents case, right? They said that schools could and conferences could negotiate their own TV contracts. And that's what kind of led to the proliferation of TV contracts eventually. Well, in 1984, nobody was thinking about $4 billion for a conference for their games, right? And so it was just kind of like, yeah, sure, the schools, there's an antitrust case, but the schools should be able to have their own, schools and conferences negotiate their own contracts. And the dissent in that case, so 5-4 decision, said, hey, if we do this, this is going to lead to football stadiums that look like Taj Mahals, and we're eventually going to do away with the amateur model of college athletics. Unbelievable glimpse into the future there by whoever wrote that dissent in 1984, because here we are. We've got incredible facilities all over the place, and we're on the verge of passing name, image, and likeness. So I do think in the next 12 months we'll get something hammered out and get it into the legislation, yeah.
Do you think there'll be a cap on how much the kids can make?
I don't know what the model's going to look like. I know there's a lot of different models getting pushed around. I'm not sure what it's going to look like. Legally, I think there can still be a cap, at least at the federal level, right? So that's why a bunch of states are saying you got to do it. I mean, people are going to rely on state law. I mean, the whole deal legally is just messy. Do I think it's going to be at an NCAA level where there'd be a cap? I don't know. You know, I know that people are talking about that. I know that's a heavy part of the conversation. There kind of already is, right? We passed cost of attendance legislation several years ago, so they can be compensated that way. And there's other stuff. I mean, I think student athletes are not paid yet. This is not my opinion on whether or not they should be, but from a factual standpoint, they're taken care of better than they ever have been in the past, which is great, right? It's a great step in the right direction. So will there be a cap? I'm not sure. I know that you'll see structured legislation rather than a cap. My suspicion is that schools can't be involved in arranging for name, image, and likeness benefits. I think that will be the check, right? Instead of just saying, well, you can make up to $50,000, I think what's going to end up happening is schools can't be involved in it. That will probably be the internal check on that legislation more so than a cap. But again, I don't know that that's been decided yet. I think they're still hammering out the details.
Yeah, I just find it interesting. You know, if somebody like, for example, at East Carolina, Holtnagler's can advertise for Greenville Toyota, but, you know, the offensive lineman that's protecting him probably ain't going to get many opportunities to make money off of his name.
Sure.
So it'd be interesting to see if that calls dissension on the team.
When you talk about, or, you know, historically courts have said players are not employees and cannot unionize. I mean, that's been across the board. Nobody has ever said that it's okay. That was the NLRB case, in Chicago with Northwestern, that they had one regional person say, hey, maybe they can, but the national NLRB board later kicked out on jurisdictional grounds. And so across the board with decisions, courts have refused to say student athletes are employees and can unionize. So that'll be interesting. Can they unionize to now say, hey, we want as a team, you know, $5 royalty for every jersey that's sold? You know, will we get to that point? Probably, right? How does it look? That I don't know. So,
yeah, that's
a lot of interesting stuff.
It is.
Oh, you got a question?
Yeah, Hank, during your time at FIU, did that overlap with Coach Shank and Court Shankwaller?
Yeah, it did. It did. I had a ball getting to know those guys. Did a Wednesday lunchtime Bible study with them. In fact, just a ball getting to know them. Got to catch up with Shank last year when I was down for the ECU and Cincinnati football game. I got to chat with him for just a few minutes. Unbelievable guy. Court, unbelievable coach as well, and another A-plus guy. So it did overlap with them. Always great to have two folks who love East Carolina the way I did around, and just, you know, a sense of familiarity. You know, it was really neat to have those guys down there and just get to know them better. You know, obviously I knew Court in high school and stuff, but getting to know them both, I lived with a lot of players in college that were coached by Shank, and they all just think the world of that family. And so getting to know them professionally and personally was a real treat for sure.
Hank, I know you follow the program closely at East Carolina. What are your thoughts on Coach Mike Houston?
Oh, I think he's an absolute winner, big time, big time. And what makes me really excited, I don't know another coach who I've talked to that knows him who hasn't been over the moon with great things to say about him. And so I think he's an absolute winner. I'm really excited he's here. I'm just really excited. You know, again, I grew up going to East Carolina games. They had it rolling. The stadium was packed and, you know, knocking off top 25 teams whenever we felt like it and that kind of thing. And so I'm ecstatic that he's there. I think he's an incredible coach. I think he'll do an incredible job. And I'm really excited to watch that program really get back to the level that obviously we'd all love to see it at.
Hank, obviously you love Rock Hill and Winthrop, but I'm sure at some point you'd love to come back to Greenville and be a Pirate again.
You know, we've talked about that. My wife and I have talked about that. And, you know, I don't know. It's one of those deals. I think they're just in incredible hands over there. I don't know John Gilbert, but I know some folks who do. And you talk about another person who the first thing anybody ever says is he's a good guy, which is fantastic to hear. You know, at some point, do you want it to happen? My wife and I have talked about it. It may be such a labor of love, it kills me. It may not be the best idea for me. You know, I might be too invested. You know, mixing, I've got an East Carolina tattoo right here. So I think, you know, mixing something that you care so much about, you know, professionally, is that the healthiest thing? My wife and I have talked a lot about it. You know, who knows? Like you said, I just love Rock Hill. Could not be happier. Work for not just an unbelievable AD, but he's an elite human being, has become somebody I'm very close with. And so love the opportunity to work for him, love our student athletes and our community here, like you mentioned. So we'll see, you know, you never know, you know, what happens down the road. And, you know, another thing my wife and I talk about is we try to not look too far down the road. You know, I had a twin brother I lost unexpectedly a couple years ago that a lot of folks in Greenville knew and loved. And boy, that really just brings perspective. You know, so we've tried to not look 3, 4, 5, 8, 10 years down the road and just really enjoy where we are. So that's what we're doing at Rock Hill right now and at Winthrop.
Hank, at different points in this conversation, the word unity's come up. So just talk about it from a Division I athletics department perspective like you have. With everything that's going on in our society right now, obviously you guys don't have football, but you have a lot of other sports, folks from a variety of races and, you know, different socioeconomic backgrounds, so on and so forth. So just talk about some of the things that you guys do to promote that, that like mindset, and just, or maybe not even so much a like mindset, but just understanding within your athletic department.
Yeah, absolutely. Good question. I don't know how you can talk about anything without chatting about it today. And one thing that encourages me is how invested today's students are. You know, I think you forget about student athletes and just look at them as students. How invested today's students are in purposefully acting for the change that they want. It's a really powerful thing to get to see up close and get to watch every day. You know, as a department, we've had a town hall meeting. You know, we're setting up different speaking opportunities. We have a whole list of stuff that we're doing that we're really excited about that we think can create actionable change in our community and others. And the biggest thing we can do is listen to our student athletes, give them a place to talk, give them a place to learn about each other and about the world. And like you mentioned, just figure out ways to come together and move forward together. It's been a treat, right? It's been a rare pleasure to see young people, college students who care so deeply about a cause bigger than themselves. And I've been really, really happy to allow them to do that and to just listen. You know, we haven't had to do a lot as an athletics department because our students are incredible. I mean, they're pushing and driving the change that they want to see on our campus and in our community. And it's unbelievable. But, you know, we're also taking steps to make sure we've educated our staff, to make sure we've educated our coaches, to make sure we're all aware of issues, you know, that our student athletes who are people of color face every day. And, you know, it's just not something that we cannot pay attention to. And so, you know, we have different stuff that we're doing, whether it's, you know, books that we're suggesting to one another and a speaker series or just conversations that we've encouraged everybody to have. We have a really close, we're a small department. So we have, you know, 70 to 80 folks. And so a lot of us know each other and we care about each other and we've had some great conversations. So those are just a lot of the things that we've done. And we've been really intentional about all the stuff we've talked about doing. We've been really intentional about saying that these are our first steps. And that's probably the biggest thing that we've committed to doing is recognizing that what we're doing right now are our first steps. And we're going to have to continue in the future to really keep working together and paying attention to this deal.
Hank, being that you're in Rock Hill, we had on our previous episode, we had the voice of the Carolina Panthers, Mick Mixon, talking about the practice facility being there with David Tepper, moving the practice facility from Bank of America Stadium to you guys. Talk about living in Rock Hill and for the practice facility to be there in Rock Hill. And what does that bring to that community?
Yeah, I mean, that it's unbelievable for Rock Hill, right? And at Rock Hill Football City, USA, a lot of great football talent out of Rock Hill. And it's just unbelievable for Rock Hill, the growth that's going on. It's everything that you would expect. That new facility will only be a couple miles from our campus. And so, of course, we're trying to figure out ways to work with them and that kind of thing to make sure that, you know, we're all aligned really as a sports community in Rock Hill to make sure that we're doing everything we want and need to do in our community. It's been really neat. I know my boss, the athletics director, has had a lot of talks with the Panthers about different stuff that we can do, right? Things from athletic training or sports medicine, you know, things you can do from that standpoint, you know, different internship opportunities we can collaborate and work together on. You know, I think that facility down in Rock Hill is going to be absolutely incredible. I mean, Charlotte, I tell everybody all the time, I didn't think anything could top Miami. We loved Miami. But Charlotte has quickly become a place that we really adore, the old Charlotte area. And that certainly includes Rock Hill, right? Sometimes we tell folks, our friends that are in Charlotte, they're all over Charlotte. You can be over in Rock Hill. We actually live in downtown Belmont. Of course, I'm 6 or 7 days a week in Rock Hill and consider it every bit my community. But, you know, the whole Charlotte area is growing like crazy, which has been fantastic to see. I think we've just become the 15th biggest city in the United States. We're 16th, so we gained on somebody. But, you know, the Panthers are going to have tremendous economic impact. You talk about, you know, people that are going to come to that facility. I think the idea and the hope is for it to be something similar to what the Cowboys have, to where, you know, you've got retail and shops and all kinds of stuff. Just the traffic that it's going to bring to Rock Hill from an economic standpoint is going to be really fantastic. And, you know, admittedly a Panthers fan, I'm incredibly excited about the direction of the team with new ownership. I mean, he just, you know, really seems invested in doing things the right way and hopefully putting a winner out on the field. And, you know, what I do know about him, you know, I've probably seen and read a lot of the same stuff, you know, you guys and other people have. And just a lot of stuff to be excited about. I think he thinks big and goes after it. So really excited about that for sure.
No doubt about it. Bubba, did you have another question? I guess not. What about you, Kyle? Did you have another question, Frank?
No, I'm good. Just keep doing a good job at Winthrop, and maybe one day, whether you want to or not, we'll see you back in Greenville.
They try to recruit you back.
That sounds good. Hey, I'm sorry about the internet issues. Like I said, it's Murphy's Law, I suppose. First time I've had a Zoom meeting in 4 months that didn't go well. So
believe me,
sorry
about that.
I think it's our bad luck, not you. Actually, we got one. Let's see. Hey, hang on 1 second. We got a comment here for you.
Here we go.
Drew Meadows, Hank, you guys have one of the few varsity sports programs in the region. Do you see that arena taking off even more now with the COVID situation?
Yeah, great question. So for those who aren't familiar with esports, it is just what it sounds like. It is esports, electronic sports, gaming. When we went to start esports and hire an esports coach, I can listen and talk for hours and hours, and I had no idea about esports, right? And there's different games, right? There's League of Legends, there's all these different things, and you know, asking somebody on your esports team who's like a League of Legends player to then go play a different video game or a different contest or competition would be like asking your volleyball team to play golf. You know, it's just entirely different. And so I was blown away. There's more people that watched esports, a couple of different games. There's more people that watched the final than the AFC or NFC championship game 2 years ago. And so it's just something that you've got to pay attention to. It's incredible that industry right now. It is taking off. We have a top five national esports program. And what Drew meant by varsity, our esports is actually under the Department of Athletics, which is unique. There's three or four schools in the whole country that have that. And so I love it. It's been incredible. They've been a great addition to our campus and to our athletics department. They're top five team in the country, which, I mean, I remember when was it 2011 or 12, East Carolina won a club baseball championship and I was fired up, you know. And I would just fight the narrative all day that people would say these are not sports or whatever. I mean, these are our students who are competing and excelling at what it is that they do. And I just couldn't be more proud of that group and what they bring to our campus. Top five in the country in anything is a really special deal. And so I think that esports is going to continue to boom. You know, this is a generation of kids who are going to grow up being so technology driven and so literate when it comes to technology, and there's no way it won't, right? So I learned so much. There's you know, a point of diminishing return. They only practice for a certain amount of time every day because then your reflexes get bad and your eyesight gets bad and you develop bad habits, just like in golf, right? You don't go hit 500 golf balls because you get tired and develop bad habits. Same thing in esports. And so it's an incredibly interesting field and interesting competition. Certainly with COVID, right? It's going to continue to boom because folks can sit in their house and do it. As long as their internet's better than mine, you know, they can sit in their house and play. So certainly with COVID, I think it's going to boom. We're working with the city of Rock Hill. I'm chairing up a deal where we're working with the city of Rock Hill right now to try to use one of the city facilities as sort of an esports hub. And our team will play there to generate some buzz around the community about esports and that kind of thing. It is absolutely booming right now. And Drew, I do certainly think that in the COVID world, there's going to be a lot of parents who are very willing to let their kids sit inside and play video games as opposed to potentially going out and getting sick. And then when they find out their kid can get a college scholarship, they're certainly going to be in support of it. And then when they find out that, I don't know what the game was, but a couple years ago, a 16 or 17-year-old kid won the world championship and won $3 million. So I think there's a lot of parents that will be fully supportive of that. So I think esports is primed to boom. I think it was before COVID, and I think that's COVID's really only kind of sped that up.
Kyle.
I was never a gamer guy. I was never a video game guy. One of my old college roommates, Drew Sutton, and he used to force me to sit there and watch him play all the time, but. I was never a huge gamer, but boy, it's really interesting.
Now, what I started to say, Kyle, your eligibility clock hasn't started ticking yet. You still have five to play for.
There you go. If you need look, if you need a player for any old school 80s game, Galaga, I'll be your Huckleberry.
Little Zelda. There you go.
You look like Rodney Dangerfield. You're going back to school. One of my favorite movies from the 80s. Awesome. Hank, I'll tell you what, man, I'm very excited about that. I'll have to one final question I have you. If you don't mind me being nosy, what's the cost of that kind of program for esports to run for the budget-wise for sports? That was just a question comes to mind.
Yeah, good question. I mean, if you have really good internet, you know, and you have computers and some headsets, I mean – it's not terrific, right? I mean, you admittedly, you do need scholarship right now. You have to go give players scholarships to lure them to your campus. And it may be like an equivalency sport, right? You're not giving folks the full ride, but, you know, we have a lot of equivalency sports in NCAA. So whatever you decide as an institution to put into your scholarship budget, then you've got to pay a coach. Past that, it's extremely negligible. I think you can start a program. Total startup costs $50,000 to $65,000 probably. And then recurring cost annually of whatever your scholarship number is, plus a salary for your coach. And then maybe some there is some travel involved. There's a few times a year they might go to Pennsylvania for a tournament or go somewhere else for a tournament. But it's relatively negligible. I think you can get started for $50,000 to $65,000 and then determine from there how much scholarship and salary you want to put into it.
The Barber University, you can start one, Kyle.
There you go.
That could be your first sport. There you go. Hank, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you. I know we probably kept you longer, but it means a lot that you come on.
No problem.
Come
back on again. Yeah, I couldn't have enjoyed it more. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thanks,
and thanks for listening to the podcast, too. Appreciate it very much. We have at least one listener now, guys. That's great.
You got it. You got it.
Have That's a it. Good one, man.
Here I am. I know you got a lot more than me. You guys do a great job.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Enjoyed meeting you and definitely look forward to having you back on.
Thanks, Hank.
You bet. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Hank Harewood, great. There's Bubba. He finally – now you – now there you are.
As soon as Hank's gone, Bubba said, wait a minute. What if Bubba and Hank are the same person?
Yeah, exactly. I know I'm going to hear it from Hank about this, but the reason I just now made my appearance with my face to radio is because I had to take the long way home so I wouldn't lose service more than what I did.
Well, it happens. I think one thing is for sure in this country.
No, I was just going to say, Dave, you know I'm telling the truth because remember that Mick Mixon interview, how I kept you waiting for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I was thinking Bubba was going to come on, and I didn't want to, like, snub Bubba from the interview. And so I just kept – poor Mick was talking, and obviously I love Mick. Mick can talk for hours, you know. He's a great guy and very knowledgeable about many things, including life. And I was just waiting for Bubba, like, is Bubba going to come on? And then it was just it's the world we live in, I guess, the technology as far as the cell service and that sort of things can be. And maybe that's maybe geography is some of it, but it's just sometimes it can be very frustrating. So anyway, we've got a lot of great content coming up, Bubba, I know, in the next couple weeks. But certainly on Thursday night, we got another big show.
Yeah, we do on Thursday. That's what we were going to have Charles Arbuckle, but unfortunately he had to reschedule. So that's still to be determined. But in addition to Charles, we'll catch up with, drew a blank.
David Glenn.
We'll catch up with DG David Glenn and then, a to be determined guest, but yeah.
John Arbuckle, yeah. Guys, I know that season tickets are going very well. I want to remind folks, great time to be a Pirate. A lot of great things are happening. 1-800-DIAL-ECU if it's during the business hours or anytime, ecupirates.com. Hey, let's have a huge year. Mike Houston's going to do big things. Let's support Mike Houston and his coaching staff. And if you want to, for the athletics department to grow, then we've talked about this before, Kyle. I know you've said it a couple of times. It'll be my turn to say it. What's happened in the past, leave it in the past. Let's actually support the program by the athletics I'm talking about by buying a whole bunch of season tickets. And who knows if we sell 25 or 50,000, we won't do that. But let's say we sell 25 season tickets.
25. 25. Yeah.
No, I know that. I'm joking. I'm being sarcastic. That would be nice. That would be nice. No, if we sell seriously 15, 16,000 is what I'm still hopeful for. I know that's a long shot, but that's what the administration wanted before COVID. And so we beat the COVID goal. And so why not in a couple months? I mean, you never know what will happen.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be great. I'm going to shoot for 12.
I know that it's high, but I want to keep that bar high.
High.
If I say, yeah, well, hey, 11th, what if I just said 11,000? So we get to 11,000 and, you know, let's put the bar a little high for us. We're East Carolina. That would be nice to have the bar high again instead of having it too low. But anyway, I know we have a lot of great things coming up. And by the way, before we go, Bub, I want to remind folks about speaking of season tickets, we have our season ticket sweepstakes. And I want people to get involved. A pair of season tickets, who knows, that might be your only way to get in the stadium this year.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter, TheSportsOBJ. You can, in addition to following us, in order to get your name entered into the hat, like and retweet there, and then it outlines the details of the contest, or the other ways you can put your name into the hat multiple times, going to Facebook and sharing and liking, following, and then also subscribing wherever you listen, and then subscribing on YouTube.
Yeah, if you happen to be on our Facebook page watching this and you haven't liked our Facebook or Twitter, even if you already liked the Facebook, if you haven't liked the Twitter, if you haven't subscribed, go do that, and you'll be entered in a chance to win season tickets.
One of the easiest promotions ever in the history of broadcasting, thanks to our Bubba Rosenbaum. He made it very, very easy, and it's for a huge prize, and we're trying to support the university by doing that and to get the buzz out, and certainly with COVID. Don't worry about whether we're going to have a season or not. We're going to have the season, and just simply go to ecupirates.com again or 1-800-DIAL-ECU to get your tickets, and also you can register to win the tickets we have here. All right, guys, do you have anything before we go?
No. Go Pirates.
All right, thanks to Coach Curry. Thanks to Hank Harewood. Appreciate both of them very much. Thanks to Bubba and Kyle. I am Dave Richmond, and you've been listening and watching The Sports Objective right here. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.